Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for listening. Coming up on this half-hour edition, putting smiles on the faces of abandoned and severely handicapped children. A small group of Catholic sisters reaches out to needy families near Jerusalem, warming the hearts of age-old enemies. And the Vatican in cyberspace, the what's, who's, and where's it going of the Holy See's website. Anyone who's a mother will understand the terrible anguish many parents feel when they give birth to a child with severe disabilities. Besides their very natural concern for their child's health and future, many find themselves at a loss emotionally and economically over how to care for their child. Well, just imagine the added angst if the family in question lives in a war zone where checkpoints and walls limit travel between their home and the clinic, where, if they're lucky, their child receives professional care. I'm talking about the Holy Land, where not long ago I spoke to some very courageous and loving religious from the Daughters of Charity who work among the poor there. Sister Susan Sheehan is one of four sisters who run a home for some 70 severely disabled children in Ankaram, the village where St. John the Baptist grew up just west of Jerusalem. I asked her about the care they offer and who are the children they welcome into their home.
We host children from all over Israel, both Arab and Jewish. In recent years, we've been giving the area of Ashdod, Eskelon, and Beersheba. So many of our Arab children happen to be Bedouin. And they're ages 2 to 15, and we have a few older children who are awaiting placement.
Now, if you are only four sisters running the home, who else is helping you?
We have very dedicated staff, both Arab and Jewish, professionals and non-professionals. And we also have about 25 volunteers, mainly from countries in Europe.
Now, I understand the Daughters of Charity have other houses, such as this one in the Holy Land. How many children are you able to care for in total?
One of our houses in Nazareth is a hospital, and they also have a clinic and a school for the deaf. And in the school for the deaf, there's probably 100 children, but they might not go to school every single day. They come from the villages. Then in Haifa, we have 60 children, just like our own, severely handicapped, both mentally and physically. In Jerusalem, we have adult handicapped, three sections, men, women, and grandmother section. And we have other different services in our home in Jerusalem. In Bethlehem, we have a hospital and a baby home for normal children, and in Bethany we have a home for boys, and I think that's our six houses.
My goodness, so that is certainly a lot of good work that you are sharing with many, many people there. Was there ever a time when you wished you could do more? Do you have to ever say no to a child?
I think handicapped children have such great needs that you can never meet all their needs. So you always feel like you should be able to do more.
Have you ever had to turn a child away?
As an institution, when the social services in Israel send us a child, a file, the child is chosen to come to our institution on the grounds of its physical and mental abilities. If the child is too slightly handicapped, for example, walks and talks and is very sociable, and his needs would not be met here. So we have to, our doctors usually decide, but a team of us decides who comes and who doesn't come. So there are times when we have to reject a child, but it's because the child is more progressed than our children and would not fit into our program here. We have a school on the grounds that's also directed toward our certain disabilities of our children. And if a child was like a Down syndrome child, they're usually higher level than our children, so they wouldn't fit here properly.
In your school, what sort of activities are the children involved in?
They go out to swimming. They have outings. They have pets. We have a Snoozyland, a special therapy room. We have a black room for eye exercises. They have physiotherapists that work with them, music therapists. We work a lot with the senses, developing the senses and a body awareness. And some learn to eat by themselves and some basic skills. A lot of physiotherapy work is done with them, so they learn to sit or to eat or to walk or to stand.
Now, you said you have some more than 20 children who actually are on feeding tubes.
Yes, mainly on gastro tubes, the tube that goes directly into the stomach. Some are fed with a drip system called kangaroo system, and some are fed with syringes.
And
they have liquid food.
Your staff is Jewish and Arab, you said.
Yes, uh-huh.
Do you find that they unite in their love and their care for these children?
Oh, very much so, very much so. They're just they have great ties, very close, and they work beautifully together. We have really had no problem between the Arab and Jewish people here. And when there's a bomb, everybody sympathizes with everybody. Or when there's a tragedy in the country, everybody is sorrowful.
Is this the same with the parents? They must undergo tremendous hardships having children with a severe handicap. Many probably feel they're ill-prepared to care for their children who really do require a special trained care and therapy.
Most of the children are here because the parents cannot give nursing care 24 hours. We have nurses on 24 hours. The children are near oxygen machines and suction machines. The parents usually have other normal children at home, and they're all their time cannot go to one child and neglect the others. So we're very happy to pick up where the parents cannot continue.
Are you able to offer them special counseling and training?
To a limited degree. Mainly it's through social services. We've tried here as an institution, but because of the problem of Arabic and Hebrew, and translation, that the effectiveness of the counseling is not so good. But when they go to social services in the area from where they're at, they're provided counseling there.
Have you found that your program has in any way helped unite Jewish and Arab families?
Oh, definitely. Our parents will unite to fight for our children's rights many times here in different ways, and they're very supportive. They meet every month, and they're very supportive of us as an institution. Most of our children are Muslim and Jewish, though we do have two Christian children, and they really support us as a Catholic institution.
You have four children who have been completely abandoned. Tell me their stories.
Usually they're abandoned in the hospital, and they've never known their parents. And it's just very difficult. Most of them come to us a year or two in the hospital, so they've raised in a very sterile situation and not been cuddled and hugged. And some of them will not want us to even touch them in the beginning when they first come to us. So it takes us 6 months to a year to get them to be affectionate and responsive to affection and love.
Now, before, when we were talking on the phone off the air, you said that one story really hit you in particular. What was that?
It was a little boy whose parents just couldn't handle the fact that he was handicapped nor could take him home. So he came directly to us, but we found that mentally he was a little higher than some, and he can repeat words. And the sisters taught him Abba and Ima, which is mother and father. And we started realizing that the parents were very sweet people. They just didn't have the courage to visit their son. So the social worker and the sisters worked with them until one day they came to the home. And the boy saw his father a long distance away, and he yelled right out, Abba, Abba, Abba. And the father melted. And I think so did we, of course. And ever since, they've taken the child out every single Saturday.
So you've really been able to reunite families as well.
Right, right.
Another story that you mentioned to me was one child was actually found in a cave.
Right. She was abandoned in a cave. And we, of course, have no idea of her background or whatever.
But with no family, do some of these children ever want for love and affection?
Oh, we hope not, because of all our children that cannot sometimes move their arms and legs, they still have a beautiful smile. And I think maybe we have one child or two only that is so handicapped that they're unable to smile. Most have beautiful smiles, and it shows that they feel loved and cared for.
عند أقدامي صليبك في المساء.
And my thanks there to Sister Susan Sheehan, speaking there from Ankaram, just west of Jerusalem. Well, the Daughters of Charity of St. Vincent de Paul have been putting smiles on the faces of needy families since the International Society of Apostolic Life was founded in Paris by St. Vincent de Paul and St. Louise de Marillac in 1633. The religious who give their lives serving the poor now number more than 21,000 and are present in some 94 countries. Often the people the sisters serve have no schools, no hospitals, and inadequate shelter and food. The congregation has been present in the Holy Land for more than a century. Well, if you'd like to have more information on their programs and to find out how you can volunteer, check out their website. That's www.daughtersips.org. Again, that's daughtersips.org. Benedict has urged the Church to take advantage of new ways of communicating to spread the gospel. But he also says the Church has an obligation to point out areas where the media has a harmful effect, especially on children. Well, when we think of new methods of communication, the internet immediately comes to mind. Without a doubt, the advent of the World Wide Web has had a profound effect on almost every aspect of our lives. It's not only changed the way we communicate, but also the way we do business, retrieve information, and even educate ourselves. And the Catholic Church is no exception. The Holy See's Internet Office strives to keep abreast of this fast-changing world and is actively exploring strategies for using this new technology to communicate the gospel message. The results in cyberspace at www.vatican.va. Susie Hodges tells us more.
The Holy See's internet site was launched without fanfare in 1995. It began with one web page containing a single document, the Pope's Christmas message for that year. But the site expanded rapidly and now contains a storehouse of information, not just for the faithful, but for art lovers, historians, tourists, and the merely curious. Nowadays, it typically gets over 1 million unique visitors a month. But that number increased dramatically during the papal transition period in the spring of 2005. Sister Judith Zobelin works at the Holy See's internet office and was one of those who helped set up the site. She identified the internet's potential shortly after it exploded on the scene in the mid-1990s, and together with a group of colleagues, she took the idea of launching a website to Pope John Paul, who quickly gave them the go-ahead. Sister Judith believes the Church must expand its presence on the internet, and she spoke about the thinking and mission behind the Holy See's site and about some of their latest projects.
Well, I think there, on the part of the Holy See and any Catholic organization around the world, there's great interest in internet because, for two reasons, I think. One, it's an enormous means of evangelizing and communicating among church organizations and to people who may not know much about what the church says or teaches. In fact, one of the things we've seen with our search engine is when there's any major event in the world, terrorism, war, you know, the tsunami, you name it, when there's something that stirs the heart of the global village, they come to the Vatican site to figure out what did the Holy Father say about it. I mean, the Holy Father, as we know well, is an incredibly strong moral voice that many in the world listen to and want to know what he says, even if they don't agree with him. So internet has become the way that people really are able to find out what he said when something breaks, big news or crisis or something like that. So I think there's great interest on the part of the Holy See in seeing what we can use internet for and how we need to use it. Now, keep in mind that our internet office is both an information provider, which is what we've been talking about so far, getting the documents out, letting people search, you know, on the documents along those lines. But we are also the service provider for the Vatican community. So we have lots to do with that, you know, just the email exchange and how we're going to do that, the sort of what we call in the business back-end use where you might, you know, the different dicasteries are working on their little sub-pages on the site and other exchange of information that would be intra the Vatican. So there's a lot happening along those lines as well.
One of the most striking features about the internet is the way it crosses all boundaries and is truly global. And the same is true of the Holy See's website, as Sister Judith goes on to explain.
I think internet, if you just look at our site, it requires 6 different languages. So you're always bending your mind around a culture and a language in order to take the same document or the same graphics or the same symbols that you're presenting on the site and kind of seeing how that will be perceived by a different culture and a different language. So there's always, it's more like a consciousness of being intercultural at this point. Also through the internet, for example, in our search engine, we have feedback from people from about 120 different countries every single month. And you know that what you're doing out there is reaching people and that you're touching them with the whole message of the Holy Father and the Magisterium. And that message is getting somehow enculturated in some form or the other in each one of those 120 countries.
As the Holy See's website has expanded in scope, Sister Judith says so has her job description.
Well, the office has grown to a certain size and I think also you might say mission in terms of the use of internet, so that we now have a capo ufficio, or a department head, Padre Fernando Vergez, who really manages the people and the site and also makes that interface with the rest of the Vatican organizations. My work then has become more to work on new projects, to try to see how we can reapply the internet in some new ways, and you might call it research and development. Some of the ideas go forward, some of them don't. Some of them take time to work on and realize. But it's very interesting. It's allowed you to really look at the possibilities of internet in a lot of different situations and to interface with people, again, all around the world who are also doing some new things and see if these things are appropriate for our site of the Holy See and, you know, maybe try to do a little test project with it and see what other people might say who need to decide what the Holy See will do with internet.
One of the new projects Sister Judith is currently involved in is the running of a trial e-learning site, and she explains why they embarked on this move.
Right now we're working on some e-learning, trying to take some of the papal documents and make them, particularly for young people, and I say young, maybe 20 to 35 years old, young adults who are living for the first time on their own, trying to live their faith, make it a place where they can come, learn something about their faith, and hopefully work within a local church situation. That's the idea of it. You learn on the internet, you exchange on the internet, but then that should bring you back to a local community, because community can't just happen on the internet. It has to be, particularly in the church, in some kind of an actual situation. It has to be a parish or a university system or young adults in the diocese or something. So we're trying that. We're testing it in a number of places in the world. We're testing it with a number of different kinds of group. Not that we'll become a learning center at the Vatican, but that we can begin to test some ideas and learn who else is doing it and interact with each other, feed each other, see how our little piece, which not little, but our piece would be anything to do with the papal magisterial documents. How can we assist, help other people to utilize those in something they might do, and then also trying it ourselves. So it's not public. It's in what we call beta form, which means we've asked particular people to help test it. And so therefore, as it will always be, you have to have an ID and password to get in. And we were trying to see through some local groups that we know already in the local church, parishes, like I said, universities, there was a Catholic hospital that did it, religious communities are trying it to see if it's a mode that will help enrich their situation as a Catholic local situation.
The internet offers many opportunities to evangelize because, as Sister Judith points out, the majority of those who log on to the Holy See's site are not necessarily Catholic.
The great thing about internet is you're reaching a body of people who are unchurched for the most part. You have many people who don't, you know, particularly have a religion or weren't raised in a religion or don't really care. But they get on the internet and there's a drawing into the symbolism, into the visual, into some of the information or the personalities that are like the Holy Father that can easily be touched, if you will, through the internet. So I think people are fascinated. You call it curiosity or call it that inner nature of man seeking the sacred and finding it in a ritual of a Mass.
When it comes to the Holy See's website, it's no surprise to learn that the focus of people's attentions when they log on is the Pope. Sister Judith again.
Yeah, without a doubt, it's the Holy Father. And there's no question that people come to the site to really, I think, see the documents, to hear what he has to say, to catch the news, things along those lines. Video, we're starting to do a video archive. That's starting to get some. The problem is it's always in Italian. So, you know, most of the people on internet probably speak either Spanish or English or even French. I think they're much more international languages. But people want visual on internet, so we're trying to do that vis-a-vis the graphics and some of the video offerings of the different celebrations and important things that the Holy Father does. But by and large, people come to find out what the Holy Father has to say. And then, of course, there are other major documents that come out of the different dicasteries, which are also important. I think one of the heaviest traffic times before the death of the Holy Father was when they released the document on Fatima. People just couldn't wait to get online and find out what was going on with that whole prediction of Sister Lucia. So there is interest in what the Church has to say.
Whilst the internet provides many advantages in terms of the speed and ease for communicating on a global level, it also has numerous dangers, especially for the young who spend so much time on the net. Sister Judith believes one of the key challenges for the Church when it comes to the internet is to help ensure that young people don't fall into the trap of living their faith virtually instead of connecting to a real community in a parish.
Yeah, I think I'm always on the net looking at what people are doing and, you know, trying to figure out, if you will, some sort of trends or even to look at some things and see where people are getting trapped in internet. The whole idea of, you know, in the past 10 years, one of the biggest changes caused by internet or enabled, let's say, by internet has been the capacity, particularly for young people, to live virtually and not actually. And so to me, that's an enormous danger. 10 years ago when people were writing the Holy Father, they were writing him because they felt connected to him by their local parish, their priest, the social community they had vis-a-vis the church there. Now you don't have that as much, particularly with young people. You have them meeting on the net, sharing on the net. You have things like Facebook and MySpace and Flickr, and they talk to each other that way. And so they don't have that, body base in a local community. So to me, there's been that enormous shift where people can think that they're living because they're living on the internet. Then you go going beyond that, where you can, I don't know if you know the terminology, first life and second life. I encountered it about a few months ago when I was talking to a group of techies. But first life is your actual life. Second life is the life that you live on the internet. And so the life that you live on the internet sometimes eclipses your actual life. And so people will even, as we know in gaming, they'll invent personalities. You can be a completely different person than you are now. And you go on living your life in sort of this major persona, which is not you. People who have an actual life that has some substance to it are not perhaps in danger as much as young people who are trying to discover who they are and are very confused, can be confused by some virtual reality they created about themselves. So I do spend the time looking at a lot of different sites and trying to figure out what's happening and where to meet people so that the faith is really a presence for them and that they can turn to.
That was Sister Judith Zobelin of the Holy See's Internet Office. And I'm Susie Hodges. Well, you'll find the Holy See's website at www.vatican.va. And besides finding the latest information about the Pope, his writings, and his activities, you'll also see links here to the Vatican Secret Archives, the Vatican Library and Museums, the Vatican Printing House, the liturgical calendar, and information on recently canonized saints. Again, the address is vatican.va. Well, that brings today's program to a close. I'm Tracy McClure, thanking you for joining me for the last half hour. Tune in again tomorrow at the same time and on this same channel for the next English feature program, or you can hear us at any time of the day or night by clicking on our website. That's vaticanradio.org. Just look for the English service. We'd also love to hear your comments or suggestions, so send us an email. We appreciate snail mail, too. Just send us a note to the English Service at Vatican Radio, Piazza Pia 3, Vatican City, 00120. Again, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.